And now it's time for Highlights from Christian History with Michael Goins. It has been said that a people that forgets its history loses its identity. And without a doubt, contemporary confusion about what it means to be a Christian, and even a Baptist, may be directly traced to the idea that the past is irrelevant to the modern world. In such a climate, intent on deconstructing history, we are more convinced than ever that an understanding of our rich history is of paramount importance. So we're glad that you've joined us for this edition of Highlights from Christian History. Here's Brother Goins with today's segment.
The topic today is the ministry of the Apostle John. We're looking at A.D. 60 to A.D. 100. The beginning of Roman persecution. Persecution during the first 30 years of Christian history came primarily from religious Jews. Persecution from secular sources, like the Roman emperors, was rare, for they considered Christians to be merely another Jewish sect and the Jewish religion was legal. This changed, however, in A.D. 64. Nero, the Augustus mentioned in Acts 25:21, was losing popularity. When a disastrous fire broke out in Rome and raged for almost an entire week, 10 of the 14 regions of the city were destroyed. Nero was in Antium when the fires began, but returned to the capital city and organized a significant firefighting effort. Nevertheless, this could not stop rumors that Nero fiddled while Rome burned, and various conspiracy theories implicating the emperor for deliberately setting the fires to boost his own political popularity. It soon became evident to him that to deflect public suspicion that he was responsible for the arson, he would have to implicate someone else. So Nero blamed the fire on the Christians. Christians had recently evoked public suspicion because of their refusal to worship the emperor, their separate way of life, and their secret meetings. Immediately, Nero launched a campaign of persecution against them. Some Christians were dressed in furs and killed by dogs, and others were dipped in pitch and used as human torches to illumine his gardens near the Mons Vaticanus. Nero also seized the occasion to slay the two most visible leaders of the early church. The Apostle Peter was crucified upside down, and the Apostle Paul was beheaded on the Ostian Way, just outside the city of Rome. The Roman historian Tacitus described the grisly circumstances. Nero punished with the utmost refinement of cruelty a class hated for their abominations who are commonly called Christians. Christus, from whom their name is derived, was executed at the hands of Pontius Pilate in the reign of Tiberius. In Rome, an immense multitude was convicted, not so much on the charge of arson as because of their hatred of the human race. Besides being put to death, they were made to serve as objects of amusement. They were clad in the hides of beasts and torn to pieces by dogs. Others were crucified, others set on fire to illumine the night when the daylight faded. Tacitus proceeded to acknowledge that the Christians were, quote, destroyed not for the public good, but to gratify the cruelty of an individual. Why were Christians such easy targets for Roman persecution? Why were they, as Tacitus said, hated for their abominations? Three primary reasons for the growing secular disdain of Christianity might be cited. Number one, they refused to acknowledge the Roman pantheon. Christians were monotheists in a polytheistic society. They believed in only one God revealed in Jesus Christ, Deuteronomy 6:4, 1 Timothy 2:5. Conscience would not permit them, therefore, to engage in the rituals that were such an important part of Roman society, such as burning a pinch of incense before the bust of Caesar or sacrificing to some deity for the welfare of the state. Their lack of tolerance appeared arrogant and unpatriotic to the Romans. The Romans called them atheists. Number two, their rites and ceremonies were misunderstood. They called one another brother and sister and claimed to love one another. The Romans mistook this for an endorsement of incest. Further, they shared the Lord's Supper in a closed setting, as rumors spread that they ate the flesh and drank the blood of Christ. They were accused of cannibalism. The growing sense that Christianity was a dangerous cult could not be quelled. Number 3. They challenged the social order. The Christian concern to treat male and female, slave and freeman, Jew and Greek as equals, was viewed by the Romans as subversive. It undermined the class structure on which Roman society was built. Nero was the first secular leader to distinguish Christians as a separate class from the Jews. But in the general perception of things, there was still little difference between the church and the synagogue. This would change once and for all in AD 70. While Nero was persecuting Christians in Rome, Florus, a new Roman procurator, arrived in Judea. This heavy-handed ruler made it his mission to beat the Jews into shape. Judea had been a troublesome province for too long. In one day, in AD 64, Florus's soldiers slaughtered 3,600 Jews in Jerusalem. The result was open revolt. Jewish rebels attacked Roman strongholds in Jerusalem and Galilee. Hearing of the revolt, Nero sent his leading general, a man named Vespasian, and 60,000 soldiers to regain Galilee and Jerusalem. As he prepared to attack, however, Vespasian received news of Nero's death. He returned to Rome and was crowned emperor. He didn't forget his mission, however, for in the spring of AD 70, Vespasian sent an army to besiege Jerusalem. On August 5th of that year, Jerusalem fell. 1 million Jews were killed and 98,000 were led into captivity. The temple was leveled to the ground. Only one wall in the Temple Mount, the Wailing Wall, remained. After the fall of Jerusalem, Jewish synagogues throughout the Mediterranean world refused to admit Christians to their services. Their synagogue prayers incorporated a curse against the Nazarenes, and the break between the church and her Jewish religious ancestry was complete. The Apostle John and the Church at Ephesus. In the latter part of the first century, the Apostle John emerged from obscurity to exert a wide and deep influence over the churches. Hassel writes, "According to the testimony of Clement of Alexandria and Irenaeus, St. John, after the death of St. Peter and St. Paul, took up his residence at Ephesus. No city could have been better chosen as a center from which to watch over the churches and follow closely the progress of heresy. It was there that false Gnosticism, first of all, showed itself and perpetually sought new adherents. The Apostle Paul had spoken before his death of its rapid progress, 1 Timothy 6:20 through 21. In his second epistle to Timothy, 2 Timothy 1:15-18, he seems to point out Ephesus as the city most threatened with heresy, where consequently the presence of an apostle would be especially needed. Ephesus was the center of his apostolic activity, but that activity extended over a wide area. Domitian, AD 81-96, was the Roman emperor while John ministered to the churches. Domitian demanded the title Lord and God, and made emperor worship the official religion of the Roman Empire. John was among the exiles that Domitian sent to Patmos in approximately AD 96, probably because of his refusal to acknowledge Domitian's self-proclaimed divine status. It was there that John wrote the book of Revelation. Elder Hassel says of this book, "It was written during a time of persecution, contrasting the glory of the church above with the indignities heaped on the church below. The revelation seems to drown the cries and the blasphemies of earth in the songs of the blessed and of the angels. After depicting the conflict and the sufferings of the saints and the terrible judgments of God upon their persecutions, it opens a vista of the heavenly places. It is one of the grandest conceptions of the sacred writer, perpetually linking together earth and heaven, and showing in the events of religious history the counterpart of other events of which the abode of the blessed is the scene." The book of Revelation concerns both things which must shortly come to pass, Revelation 1:1, and things which must be hereafter, Revelation 4:1. That is to say, the book had both an immediate historical application to Christian people who were John's contemporaries, and a more long-range prophetic application to believers who would live in future times. In terms of its immediate value, the struggle between Christianity and the Antichrist, depicted in the context of the church's ultimate triumph through Christ, would prove very salutary to the Christians in Asia Minor near the end of the first century, as well as to Christians who would live in the second century, for AD 90 to 200 would prove to be both an age of intense persecution and an age of insidious doctrinal challenges. Elder Hassell writes again, "The church has not only to fight against Antichrist without, it has also to resist Antichrist within, to do battle, that is, with heresy and false prophecy." This two-pronged attack upon the church from the devil, that is to say, external persecution from the secular world and internal tension from the influence of false doctrine, would characterize the next few centuries in the history of the church, following Domitian. The Roman emperors Trajan and Marcus Aurelius would carry out massive campaigns of persecution against Christians, forcing many Christian people to flee to the catacombs, an elaborate system of tunnels beneath the city of Rome, for asylum. If outward pressure were not enough, the church would encounter a serious challenge from within in the form of the Gnostic heresy. The post-apostolic age of the church would be no walk in the park. These would be the times that try men's souls.
Thank you for joining us today for this brief snapshot from the past. Please join us again soon for another episode of Highlights from Christian History.